You want to make your fantasy sports league more than a fantasy? Then you need Trophy Smack.
It's the number one store for fantasy and tournament trophies, belts, draft boards, loser awards, and other ridiculous products.
Trophy Smack is more than just a trophy company with outstanding customer service and products. It's the very essence and heart of every fantasy league. And if you click now, TrophySmack.com gives you free shipping, a free loser poster, and can have the hardware to you in a few days, bragging rights included. Go to TrophySmack.com right now and take your fantasy league to the next level.
Go. It's about to be a jovial 60 minutes, my dude. And you hear right now, what you gonna hear right now?
Name change.
Of all the places, and you hear right now, what you gonna hear right now?
Name change.
Of all the places. Been with the dynasty, but does she like me? Feel like a plumber sleeping, now that's a pipe dream. For the right fee, I might be entitled to the title. Be on top like the cherry of an ice cream. Sundays, that's the one day I can complain, never complain. Cause I know the boys gon' drop a pod, prop up my squad so I can talk a lot. But here we go again, it's a new year. Rookies flowing in, it's some new tears. Who here to do fear? Bounce bells off of their chest like boutonnieres. It's a new era. Happy hour, yeah. Let me ask you this, are you trying to get picks? Are you trying to get rich? Are you trying to get ships? Then you're trying to get this. And you hear right now, what you gonna hear right now?
Name change.
Of all the places. And you hear right now, what you gonna hear right now?
Name change.
Of all the places.
What's going on, guys? Welcome on into Dynasty Happy Hour. We are here for yet another episode. It's the end of week 14. And yes, we had some exciting things going on. It was a ton of fun. There was a ton of production. But a lot of these shows, they're sitting there covering, you know, the playoffs and what's going on in the playoffs and the guys that you should play. Meanwhile, with Dynasty doesn't end, you know, once you get eliminated from the playoffs. Dynasty ends up going on and on and on as to the point where you need to pay attention to things that are surrounding you in your leagues. And this week, not only did we see a ton of production from, you know, the quarterback position and these pass catchers, we saw a ton of production from these young wide receivers, young tight ends, young running backs. So what Taylor and I wanted to talk about is more so towards the actual dynasty aspect of what happened in week 14. So what's going on, Taylor? How you doing, man? Welcome on in.
Hey, I'm good, Chase. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I cleaned up my entire house today. I was on my hands and knees scrubbing while watching the laptop right next to me. And then I had my phone on the other side. So I'm like covered in bleach, covered in just mess, but at least I got to watch the fantasy football while doing it all. Yeah, I'm excited to break this down.
Well, I mean, I'm drinking coffee at 7:30 p.m. if that tells you how my day's been.
Out of a Goofy mug, by the way. Can I add that in? Out of a Goofy mug.
Yeah, Disney trip in October, so this is my souvenir. So thank you.
Oh, it's very cool. That's very cool. Now, before we dive into this episode, for those of you who are in the playoffs, we are still going to be talking about some of the production, some of the things that happened this week. So please do not fade that. And if you are in the playoffs and you did end up doing well, then make sure you guys go to trophysmack.com and use promo code DHHRING, right? DHH ring, and you can actually go out there and you can actually get a free ring with the purchase of a trophy. So yeah, trophysmack.com, guys, go ahead and check that out. Make sure you guys go get your trophy ahead of time so that way you can wave it in your opponent's face towards the tail end of this season once the championship happens. Now, Taylor, what's the first guy that you brought up to me, obviously, is somebody that's a little bit deeper in. So just to give people an idea of what we're kind of looking at, we saw a big week out of Irv Smith Jr., who, by the way, people were saying was hurt and might not have the best, I guess, the best outlook going into, you know, this matchup. But he ended up pulling through the pain and ended up producing. So what was your take on him? And, you know, give us a little bit of an outlook of what to expect for this episode when we recap week 14.
Yeah, so hot takes tweet before the game started, but more just some educated guesses on things. And I originally had Irv Smith 60 yards and a touchdown. And I was like, that's pretty mediocre. So I upped it to 2 touchdowns on the day. He did eventually, you know, he didn't get the 2 touchdowns. I think he had 60, he had 60 something yards and a touchdown, maybe 57, something like that. But he was involved, got off to a slow start. And then Kirk Cousins, you know, loves to pile up points, fantasy points late in the games. But yeah, it was encouraging to see him used when Kyle Rudolph is inactive. I think it was a pretty obvious assumption from most people that Irv would see a bump with Rudolph out. But if we didn't see that bump, that would have been a little bit concerning. You know, we've been told for how long that you have to wait for these tight ends to develop. Totally get that. He's only 22 years old, but he's also not getting a ton of targets in that offense. Clear pecking order of Thielen and Jefferson is 1-2. And even Rudolph at the tight end position is competing with Irv for targets. So, you know, it was good to see the production out of him. He still only saw 4 targets today. It's the tight end landscape is messy. So how high, I guess, would you have Irv Smith going forward for Dynasty? I mean, you saw what he's capable of today, especially in tight end premium leagues. He really helped out. But, you know, he's only seen a couple games of 5 targets this year. Everything else has been 4 or less. So are you thinking this is a glimpse of things to come from him, or are you still kind of concerned that, you know, Kyle Rudolph, as far as we know, isn't going anywhere?
Well, the big thing with Irv Smith Jr. is the fact that he's only 22. I mean, he's younger than most rookies are coming out, you know, coming in at the tight end position. So he's still a young kid, and he has a lot of upside. I mean, he was one of the best tight ends at Alabama that they've ever had. So, you know, it's been taking him a while to actually see that breakout. Plus, he's been dealing with, you know, minor injuries throughout the year. So this is something as to where I think this is a glimpse of what's to come, especially when they're able to move on from Kyle Rudolph. But Irv Smith Jr. is somebody that I want to try and acquire, you know, in every way possible in dynasty leagues, especially if I'm out of the running. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's somebody that I could be, like, you know, flirting with the idea, depending on how my tight end situation is with, you know, a late second round pick, maybe even mid second round pick, depending on how my team is looking. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do think that this is an indication of what's to come following week 14.
And if you've ever done dynasty rankings, you know that after the top 5 or 6 tight ends, it gets very messy, very muddy. So really, you know, you might have the Irv Smith top 7, top 8 in your dynasty tight end rankings. That doesn't mean you're expecting him to be a top 7 performer necessarily this year, next year. Might take a couple of years, but like you said, 22 years old at a position that is ugly outside of the top guys. I mean, you could be looking 3 years from now, who knows what Kelsey will be. And then, you know, Ertz has kind of fallen off. Irv Smith could be the guy that at 25 years old hitting his prime is really becoming like a top dynasty tight end.
All right. So let's go ahead. And I know that Tyler loved the fact that we started out the show talking tight ends, of course, and we will get back to the tight ends, but I'm going to go ahead and jump over to the quarterback position because we actually saw a young quarterback finish out this game extremely well, or I should say this week extremely well. Aaron Rodgers, number 1 tight end on the week. Number 2 tight end is Drew Lock. Is Drew Lock an indication of what to come after his 4 touchdown performance?
Man, I'd say I'd hate to be a Broncos fan because I don't even follow that team that closely. So I don't have that much invested, but I have no idea what to think of Drew Lock. I didn't do a ton of rookie evaluation on him when he was coming out, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he was viewed a little bit more as a project type of guy, not necessarily come in right away, play, and be your franchise cornerstone. So some of the ups and downs we've seen maybe have been expected, but it seems like his ups are really, really, really up, and his downs are super ugly. I personally, as the player, don't have an issue with him. He's kind of that gunslinging type of quarterback, so he's going to have some turnover games and some erratic play making type of things sometimes. But I guess my biggest issue is I don't know that I trust John Elway to not, you know, pull the trigger on some sort of veteran this offseason that would immediately
put Dak Prescott.
Sorry, could be.
I probably should have muted myself while coughing. Sorry about that.
Hey, go ahead and get on record now, make your predictions, you know, start peppering him into the shows. But yeah, I think that's my biggest issue is not necessarily with Locke. I think he's shown those flashes. My concern is, you know, he's shown more than Dwayne Haskins did, but we saw how Dwayne Haskins, you know, new coach came in, he got benched, and I'm not sure he's going to be a starter anytime soon. Well, barring Alex Smith's injury today, but Drew Locke, I'm afraid, is going to be fighting for a starting quarterback position as early as next year. So that would be my biggest concern with him in Dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, Drew Lock is somebody that definitely needs some polishing off, right? Like, he's somebody that needs to get the right direction. And they knew that. They knew that coming into it, that he was going to be a project. That's why they brought in Joe Flacco. They expected more from Joe Flacco. They wanted to get a year or two out of him. They got all of, you know, eight or so games, however many it was. Now, with Drew Lock and the way they've been utilizing him, that's where I've gotten frustrated. Like, he hasn't been rushing nearly as often as he should be rushing. He's the fifth or sixth fastest quarterback in the NFL right now, according to combine speeds. Now, guys like Lamar Jackson didn't run, so that's not completely accurate. But according to the 40 times at the combine, he's like the fifth or sixth fastest quarterback in the NFL right now, and they're not utilizing him at all in the running game. So I do want to see an increased usage there. But if they refuse to do that, I think that Drew Lock can end up fading into the night. We really have to see what happens. And, you know, like we talked about with John Elway. Now, the third overall producing quarterback so far in week 14, keep in mind, we're still waiting for these games to wrap up, but Tua. Tua went in there and had a killer game as well up against the Kansas City Chiefs. They actually almost pulled that one out. So how are you feeling about Tua?
Yeah, I'm not a hot take guy. I'm not a bold take guy. I have very mediocre takes. And Tua's one, though, that I think my take on him is that he's overrated. And that's not that he, yeah, that's kind of been my position from the start, not because I'm a Bengals fan and I want Joe Burrow to be better. Of course, I hope Joe Burrow is better. But just from, I think the production we saw at Alabama, obviously he's shown the tools, no knock on him. I don't think he's a bad quarterback. I think he's very good. I just don't know that he's going to be as valuable for fantasy year in and year out as most people have him. I think, though, if you're a Dolphins fan, to have the 22-year-old quarterback that is immediately putting your team into a space where they can be more competitive in these games against tough competition is promising. He started off a little bit rough. He finished a little bit stronger than I thought he would. He was at one point, like, I think 15 of 31 later in the game, which, you know, sub 50% completion percentage isn't ideal. But you also have to keep in mind his weapons right now. So he's throwing to like Jakeem Grant and fourth, fifth string running back, one that wasn't even on the team like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, so, no, that's very true.
I'm not overreacting to any of his performances yet this year. I think it's promising, though, to see his development so far through just this 3, 4, 5 games that he's had, where it seems like they were kind of letting him just be a game manager from the start. And maybe because they've been forced to due to the injuries at running back, they're letting him kind of take control of the game a little bit more. So 300 yards today is obviously promising. Took him 48 attempts to get there. But yeah, he's fine. He's fine in my book, but I'm not like overly swayed one way or the other based on today's performance.
Now, yeah, for Tua, for me, it's something as to where I agree with a lot of things you said. I don't think he's overrated. I just don't like the way they were operating that offense with him. I think they could be using him in more efficient ways. But let's go on to one more quarterback, and then we're going to bounce off it. Another shocker, very similar to Drew Lock. Mitchell Trubisky over there up against Houston. I know it's Houston over there, but Mitch Trubisky crushed it, man. He melted faces. Like, is he somebody? Is he somebody that could actually make a late push for a starting job come 2021? And is he worth owning in dynasty leagues? Like, would you trade him?
Are you thinking in Chicago starting, or you just mean in general an NFL starter?
I'm talking about Chicago. So, I mean, he has over the past 3 weeks, right? He has 7 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. He's got at least 240 yards passing to each one of these. You can add in the rushing upside. And his remaining matchups are up against Minnesota, Jacksonville, and then he has the follow-up one behind Green Bay. So Mitchell Trubisky, not only is he startable the rest of the season when it comes to fantasy assets, like, he could actually be the starter for Chicago Bears come 2021.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you're not trading, you know, high draft capital or anything for Trubisky. So I think that obviously plays into the equation. He has, I think, maybe comparable job security as Drew Lock, but probably costs a fraction of what Drew Lock would cost. I think it's kind of funny that everybody just immediately says Trubisky's a bust. He's terrible. We'd rather have Foles starting. I'm like, I just don't really understand that, because Foles hasn't been good either. And, you know, I don't know why you wouldn't want to try to develop the younger guy even more. But I think, you know, when you talk about these quarterbacks that have been misused, it's interesting that they've really pulled off the last couple of years of having Trubisky run the ball. And that's something in 2018 he did really well. So I went back and looked at some of his game logs. He was routinely 5, 6, 7, 8 rushes, sometimes 10 rushes. A lot of those were designed type of things as well. Right now, he's just getting a couple scrambles a game. So that kind of hurts him from a fantasy perspective. He doesn't have that floor anymore, that rushing floor that helped, you know, offset some of his stupid interceptions. But yeah, I honestly wouldn't hate throwing a late pick. Like I would in a super flex league, I'd definitely throw like a third round pick at him. I don't think I could pull the trigger on any second round pick type of guy. But I mean, he's younger, and I think when you see the backup options in the league, like he's a fine backup quarterback that you hope someday gets a starting role or gets, you know, thrust into a starting position due to injury or something. So I don't know. I'm not sold on him as being any type of future starter for Chicago. I don't think. I can't imagine they stick with him next year.
I mean, I'm just saying, if he goes out and fires off, has 3 touchdowns and, you know, 3 of the, or 2 of the 3 next games, like it's very possible. Yeah. He already had 3 touchdowns this week.
It's possible.
So I did say like I wanted to finish up the quarterback position, but we got to talk about one person who just pulled out a win, actually, as we speak. Jalen Hurts going out there, crushing it up against the New Orleans Saints. I was a doubter, I'm not going to lie, just because it was New Orleans Saints, not because of Jalen Hurts, because it was New Orleans Saints. And I know that Tyler probably wishes that he was on this show right now to talk about it. However, you know, unfortunately, Tyler, this is my show. So, you know, maybe next time. No, I'm just kidding. This is something as to where, you know, Jalen Hurts could actually be making a huge impact moving forward. Dude, the guy crushed it, not only in the air, but he had 106 rushing yards, 5.9 yards per carry. He had a touchdown in the air, 17 to 30, which isn't great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's serviceable, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the opposite end of that spectrum of a coach saying, okay, this is how we need to change our game plan based on our quarterback, knowing that you need to get him some designed runs. I can't believe that earlier in the year they kept just bringing him in for one rushing play at a time or something stupid like that. When you get him into the game, get him into his rhythm, use him on these designed runs, like you said, 18 carries, 106 yards. And I was looking because I was trying to see if there was just one big one that was really propelling that. Not really. His long was 24. So, I mean, even take that out, he's 17 for 80. So, yeah, he's one of those Konami code quarterbacks. Are you convinced that they move on from Wentz, though? I think, you know, with the benching today, they come out and I don't know, leak, I guess, to the sources that you know, Wentz is going to not start the rest of this year or whatever. But I think they're going to try to trade Wentz. I just don't know if they'll have a buyer, and it's hard to imagine that they bench him. But again, like you said with Trubisky, if Hurts comes out and produces the next 3 games, I mean, the team was obviously way more competitive today than they have been with Wentz. I don't know how you just bench him in the offseason and go back to Wentz just because you're paying him money.
Yeah, I mean, Wentz is a lot better with a great offensive line. So that's number one. First thing off is the fact that Wentz needs an offensive line. The Eagles' offensive line is beat to hell. They have been. So obviously you want a more mobile guy. But, I mean, overall, Hurts did a better job. They're going to look for another suitor. We have the Denver Broncos as a candidate potentially, as we brought up earlier in the show. We have another potential candidate with the Colts, you know, maybe with the Patriots. Like, there are suitors out there that might be interested in him, even with a rougher contract. The issue is moving on for the, you know, for the Eagles because the money they paid him, but it's still something as to where they're going to move on from Wentz. Jalen Hurts for me is a must own in Dynasty at this point, and this is the first time I'm actually coming out and saying it. Now it might be too late because, like I said, I was a doubter. I was like, man, he might shit the bed up against the Eagles. Like, I mean, up against the Saints, this could not be a good situation. But no, I think this is a situation that we're going to see moving forward, and we're actually going to get behind. And I think that Jalen Hurts is going to be a must own. So this might be the time where you actually overpay now, so you don't have to overpay later if you need a quarterback. And guess what? His schedule for the rest of the season, dude, it's a cakewalk, an absolute cakewalk. So
yeah, I was surprised when they made that announcement that they were going to Hurts earlier this week or whatever. I was surprised when I went to look at my teams, how many teams I ended up having him on, like my taxi squad, where I didn't really realize it, that I drafted him in the offseason or whatever and stashed him there. But like you said, I think those guys that here's a question. If he has a good last 3 games, what would you be willing to sell him for if you have a Jalen Hurts share? Are you saying if you're projecting him to be a starter, would you not sell him then, I guess?
Well, this is a huge like if question, because you have, you know, your bell curve of production. Something we study over there at Fantasy Intervention is the bell curve of production. You know, at what rate is your team coming up? You know, if you're an upcoming team, or if you just have him as a backup quarterback, meanwhile, you're in the prime, or you could end up having a quarterback that's getting older and you had Jalen Hurts to take over in 2 or 3 years. And all of a sudden he's sitting a little bit sooner. So if I'm sitting there and I had excess quarterbacks, like one of my leagues, I have Josh Allen. I've got Josh Allen. I've got Russell Wilson. And I've got Deshaun Watson. I also have Jordan Love. So if I took, yeah, and that's in a one quarterback league, I just can't sell him. anyways, if I have a Jalen Hurts, you know, behind him at that point, you know, I'd let him go for easily in a one quarterback league. Give me a second rounder and I'm cool letting him go. Yeah. But if he's somebody that's going to be extremely valuable to my team moving forward, as to where like I think that he's going to be one of my starters, but I still have a starter there. I might not need him, but he could be like, maybe I just had Josh Allen, for example, right? Maybe I just had Josh Allen and I have, you know, Hurts there as my backup quarterback. I'd probably ask for a high second in one quarterback league. In a two quarterback league, dude, I'll take a late first, because eventually people need quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. You can end up finding value down the road. So I'm not in any hurry to sell him.
Yeah, I didn't mean to throw the hypothetical out there. I was just thinking, I was reading through some old threads this week about, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire hype from the summer. And if you would have sold him at that hype in the summer, you'd be looking back now thinking like, wow, what a great trade. And it's just interesting with some of the younger guys we see and get excited with their production. And you kind of have to wonder, is this kind of the peak? Obviously, you're making educated guesses here, but I'm just wondering how high his price would have to go over the next few weeks for you to be like, you know what, I'll sell a Jalen Hurts asset
gets to be like a late first, early second in one quarterback league. Like, dude, I'll take that in a heartbeat. But you would actually have to buy him off me. Like,
yeah,
you would have to impress me. Like, I'd have to be like, damn, that's sexy. I'm going with that one. All right, so let's go ahead and hop over, since we just covered the quarterbacks. Yep. Let's go ahead and hop over to these, you know, these pass catchers over here, these wide receivers. You know, we're sitting there, we're looking at some of the bigger performances. And honestly, like, it was weird week, because these quarterbacks, a lot of these quarterbacks overproduced big time to what I thought was going to happen. Meanwhile, the wide receivers, I mean, we had some big ones, but it wasn't like multiple massive guys. I guess the most impressive one to me was KJ Hamler. Mm-hmm. KJ Hamler went out there and had a hell of a game. He had what, 2 touchdown receptions, if I'm correct? I mean, just
on his 2 catches. Yeah.
Yeah. Both of his catches went for touchdowns for 40 or wait, is that 86 yards?
86 yeah. yards. Yep.
That's impressive. But this is what we expected from KJ Hamler. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to be the Deshaun Jackson type player without a quarterback until John Elway goes out and signs one, I guess. Right. So what's going on with KJ Hamler? Are you trying to buy him up? You know, if he's on waivers, hypothetically, mm-hmm. How much fab are you putting on him? If you're a non-playoff team, or if you are a playoff team, how do you feel about KJ Hamler?
In one of my dynasty leagues, he was on waivers immediately after our rookie draft, I think, pretty much. And I actually spent like probably 60 to 70% of my fab on him just because it's a pretty deep league and there's not usually playmakers out there. And I was interested to have that type of young receiver on my team. I am having a really hard time valuing Hamler because the Cortland Sutton question mark of, you know, I think Hamler's only had 2 really good games this year. He had he had back-to-back 10 target games. So that was nice. And then he had this one where he's had 2 touchdowns, but other than that's been pretty unproductive, and that's without Cortland Sutton. So I'm curious to see, yes, there may be an upgrade, maybe a major upgrade at quarterback. But once you have Sutton added back into the picture, Jerry Jeudy, and then you've got a healthy Fant, hopefully next year, where Hamler's going to be able to plug into that offense and be any sort of consistent fantasy option, that's where I'm not exactly sure about. I think even though you mentioned he'll have the Deshaun Jackson role, but even when you think about just Deshaun Jackson, he was like, if you had him on your team, you're probably flexing him pretty much every week. And you live with some of the donuts. I don't think Hamler's necessarily there yet. And I don't know that we're going to see him get there next year. He would actually might be one that I'd be interested in moving on from if somebody sees some of these big blow up games, sees a young wide receiver and wants to make an offer on him. Again, I'm not sure what you're going to be able to get for him. If I could get a second round pick for Hamler, I would take it, but you're probably not getting that unless he finishes the season really strong. For a third or later, you might as well just hold him.
Well, over the past, what is it now, 7 weeks, this was actually his second lowest snap percentage. Mm-hmm. It's only by a little bit, but I just thought that was a fun fact.
Yeah. Is Tim Patrick's a free agent, though, isn't he?
Yeah. And Hamilton as well. So
I'd be interested. Like, he should be entrenched as the number three receiver there. And if you have a good quarterback like a Dak Prescott, we've seen him. Granted, that was like insane efficiency to start this year, but he's able to sustain multiple pass catchers in an offense. So there's just too many question marks there for me there to want to truly invest in a KJ Hamler share unless you can get him super dirt cheap.
This is such a weird week. I cannot wait to dive in this research. The most amount of targets any wide receiver saw on this week was 9.
Wow.
I'm sorry, not targets. I'm sorry, receptions. Most amount of receptions. The most amount of targets was 14, 13, a few 12s. But the most amount of receptions didn't even hit double digits. And that's including like Allen Robinson, DeAndre Hopkins, Keenan Allen. All these guys normally see like, you know, 10 plus targets minimum or 10 plus receptions minimum. This is just a weird week for me, man. Like, yeah, KJ Hamler fitting up there made sense.
I'm looking at my one of my league's leaderboards, so the scoring might be a little different from others, but I think it's just a pretty standard PPR league. And I've got Tyreek Hill as the number one scoring receiver so far, and he had three catches, and he, of course, scored touchdowns and then rushed in a touchdown, which helps. But that's just super bizarre to have a week where your top scoring wide receiver put up 20 plus points, 25 points, depending on league settings, and only had three catches.
Yeah, it's absolutely bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. All right, so let's go ahead and dive into another guy who is actually a pending free agent. I really want your take on this one, Taylor. So Keelan Cole, who is a pending free agent along with Chris Conley. This is something as to where they have Colin Johnson, right? They've got LaVisca Chenault. They've got DJ Chark. Does Keelan Cole actually return to Jacksonville, or could he end up with another team as their maybe slot receiver or number two? Like Washington comes to mind right off the bat. Is there a team that you could see Keelan Cole moving on to and still retaining fantasy value? Like, are you selling Keelan Cole? Are you trying to buy Keelan Cole? Like, what's going on in your head with him?
I'm definitely trying to sell Keelan Cole just because we saw him flash. Now, granted, there's factors that played into this, but we saw him flash that 2 years ago when he first kind of burst onto the scene, maybe 3 years ago, where he kind of had some production that we were like, well, who is this guy? He's undrafted, right, I believe. Who's this guy coming out of nowhere and producing? And then he disappeared. Various factors again, but then he's reappeared this year, which has been nice. And it's actually interesting that he's been producing decently well with all the different quarterback changes going on. So it's been up and down, but he started the year hot, had a little, and that would have been with Gardner Minshew. Then even with Glennon, he was doing well. So definitely not what I've expected out of him this year, but I'd be moving on from him. Just, I think if I recall correctly, when I was looking at the upcoming free agency class for wide receivers, it's pretty strong. Pretty top heavy, I think, with like the Godwins of the world and things like that. So he's going to get like a third tier free agent wide receiver, I think. So I'd be moving my shares for him because I don't think he fits in there in Jacksonville.
So I've got a trivia question for you real quick, and you guys can actually participate in this. It's about rookie wide receivers. So if you guys are listening, which rookie wide receiver had the most receptions in week 14? LaVisca Chenault with 6 was number 2. Who had the most receptions as a rookie wide receiver in week 14 this week? LaVisca Chenault was number 2 with 6. T. Higgins was number 3 with 5. And there's probably some other people tied with him.
Yeah, I was going to guess Higgins without looking. I got nothing.
Lynn Bowden.
Okay.
However you want to pronounce it, out there for Kentucky, you know, drafted by the Raiders, Try to convert into a running back, but no, he's not playing the running back position at all. And he looked really good. He looked phenomenal today with Tua. I mean, catching balls over the middle. The dude looks quick. He looks agile. His footwork is excellent. He was targeted 9 times and caught 7 of them. Ended up finishing up with 11.9 fantasy points and half point PPR. For full point PPR, it'd obviously be what? Was that 15.4?
Yeah.
So Lynn Bowden, moving forward, like, is this an implication of what's come for fantasy?
He's interesting. Again, the big question mark in Miami is what they're doing in the offseason. I've already been looking at some of the NFL mock drafts that have, you know, one of the Bama receivers potentially going to Miami, reuniting with Tua. So I think if you think about whoever the rookie wide receiver coming in probably being the number one, I think there's a very real chance from the development we've seen that Gesicki might be the number two pass catching option in that offense.
Ooh, over Parker, huh?
Well, I just haven't seen much of that chemistry yet. Granted, they've got an offseason to build it, but between Parker and Tua, Parker was producing a lot more with Fitzpatrick throwing the ball around. And I actually somewhat believe in Mike Gesicki. I don't have a hot take on him, but I'm more of a believer than others. So
you've been reading the Fantasy Intervention group chats over there on Twitter, haven't you? Because that's what I've been creeping.
So I get, again, you're trying to figure out where Lynn Bowden fits into this offense going forward. I just don't feel like I have any interest in investing in someone that was he a third round pick?
He's fourth or fifth.
Then you know, try to convert him and then cut him pretty.
You know what? He might have been a third and then traded back for a fifth. It was two rounds of difference. I'm sorry, I don't remember.
No, that's fine. Wherever he was drafted, a mid round pick.
Ball then, spot on with that.
a mid round pick that then gets cut pretty quickly. I don't know. I just feel like he's the type of guy that's gonna be struggling to make an impact in an offense. So. Interesting day, though. He flashed last week, and then this week got more opportunities and did something with it. So he could be an interesting gadget guy.
Past 3 weeks, snap share, 32%, 45%, 71%. Mm-hmm. Week one didn't do anything. Week two, he flashed, like you said. Week three, 9 targets, 7 receptions, 82 yards. Mm-hmm. This is a guy that I want to go out and I want to get. Very similar to Colin Johnson. Mm-hmm. If you guys read the articles that were on Dynasty Happy Hour, I was super high on Lynn Bowden. Super high on Colin Johnson. And Lynn Bowden, by the way, as a receiver, not as a running back. I did not think he was going to make the transition.
I thought he'd be a quarterback, man.
I talked about that. I talked about that as him being a backup quarterback for Derek Carr and actually trying to pull in some sort of Lamar Jackson within a couple of years. But, no, I mean, this is somebody that I'm buying into 100%, just like I was Colin Johnson. I love him as a late round buy, and I think he's still cheap. If I sent you over a late second round pick for Lynn Bowden, would you take it in a heartbeat or what?
In a heartbeat, yeah. I think if you sent me a third, I would take it in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Like, this is something where, guys, Lynn Bowden is still, guys and gals, excuse me, this is still something as to where, like, you can buy him cheap. And yeah. I already have him in almost every league, so I don't need to go buy him. But
I think that's the beautiful thing about, like, you know, we're late in the season, so some of these guys that either disappointed more than we thought or they took a while, like Bowden, and started to flash late. If you like them and you're a believer in them, you can throw third-round picks at some of these guys and go get them. You could probably throw a third and potentially get them from the Hamler shareholder. You could get it from Bowden. So, like, you can throw the third-round rookie picks or dart throws. So if you really believe in the talent and you believe potentially in the situation – there's a lot of interesting guys that you can go out and just throw your third round picks at and go get them.
All right. So who was, I'm going to give you another trivia question. Okay. This is for all you
out
there.
I love trivia.
Who was week 14, right? Who was second in receptions for the running back position? Cause that's where we're moving over to. There were two people that were tied. Austin Eckler was number one with 9 receptions. Nice. Alvin Kamara was tied with the second place running back with 7 receptions. This is according to Sleeper. Who was also number two?
Mike Davis?
It was Lynn Bowden. Anyways, I guess you guys could play him at either position. But no, anyways, you know, talking about the running back position, James Robinson, you know, once again, he didn't impress, but he still proved his worth. And he's not somebody that necessarily was a smash play, but could this be an indicative of what's to come for James Robinson, where he just gets a mediocre workload?
Yes. I'm of the belief that James Robinson has a role on that team next year, whether or not they draft someone or not. I think what we saw today, again, it wasn't necessarily a smash play for him. I thought Tennessee was going to probably dominate this game because Jacksonville is a bit bad and Derrick Henry owns the Jaguars. But, you know, even in the negative game scripts, he is still the guy that is getting used. He's the only running back getting used. And in PPR leagues, even on a day where he only has 67 yards rushing, I think he broke like a 40-ish yarder pretty late in the game. The 4 receptions help prop it up a little bit. So you're looking at double-digit fantasy day for him. Again, even on a bad production day. So I think he's going to have a role there next year. I think he's a I have him at 13 in my dynasty running back rankings. So I'm all in for the rest of 2020, 2021, and we'll see what 22, you know, brings us. But
all right, so let's go ahead and bring up 2021 and who the best running back from, you know, this previous rookie class is. Finished actually in second for points this past week. Do you want to go ahead and take a guess at who that was from the rookie?
I'm 0 for 2, so I'm like a little hesitant to make a guess here. So,
dude, he destroyed it. He melted faces this week, man. He actually destroyed people.
Jonathan Taylor.
Jonathan Taylor, ding, ding, ding. The 101, or the should have been 101 of rookie drafts, Jonathan Taylor, and I love Swift. And guess what? Swift was, I believe, number 2. But, I mean, guys, like Jonathan Taylor, I'm laughing at y'all. For everybody that freaked out and sold Jonathan Taylor, I'm sorry, Cam Akers was number 2. I apologize. Cam Akers number 2. Yep. We have Swift number 3. But yes, guess who performed better than Cam Akers? Jonathan Taylor. You guys never should have been freaking out. This is a work in progress. The Indianapolis Colts did not have a great run blocking offensive line back in 2019. Marlon Mack had like the 35th best run blocking efficiency. And then we sit there and we look at Jonathan Taylor getting plugged in after he sat there with Wisconsin. With Wisconsin. And he had wide open holes to run through. He was running through hallways, essentially. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like his power was allowing him to break tackles. He was able to gain yards after contact, but he also wasn't getting tackled by 3 or 4 people at a time. Jonathan Taylor, moving forward with the Colts, he's going to learn how to read, you know, his blocks. He's going to learn how to be more patient, and he's going to succeed in this offense. And, you know, as long as they're going to be efficient with the passing game, Jonathan Taylor is going to have an opportunity, and that's what he did. He ended up taking 20 rushes to the house for 150 yards, 2 touchdowns. He had 2 receptions as well. This guy is going to be a beast moving forward. Jonathan Taylor, if you slept on him, I'm sorry. I don't really have anything else to add. Do you have anything else to add aside from apology for people that did not draft him at the 101?
No,
or people that.
I think what should have been kind of a red flag for the people that were JT haters was that even early on when he was splitting touches, he was being used as a pass catcher, which was the one thing that everybody was concerned he wouldn't be able to do that and fumbling. Then of course he has a game where he does fumble and pretty much gets benched. People are freaking out. We've got a Jordan Wilkins week peppered in. So like, yeah, it's kind of been a roller coaster of a rookie season for him, but I hope that nobody panic sold on him. Like you said, my biggest question mark when I was evaluating his rookie or his college tape was that he's always running behind multiple tight ends, a fullback, a huge offensive line. I mean, he did have holes to run through, not to take away from his speed, his athleticism, things like that. But he had big holes to run through. I thought going to Indianapolis that with that offensive line, he would have good running room, good running lanes. And we didn't see that early on in the year. And like you said, I think that's an area where he needs to adjust is his ability to read blocks and instead of chopping his feet, kind of hit the hole a little bit better. But today he showed what he can do. I think people thought this was a smash play anyway against the Raiders. But yeah, 20 carries, 150 yards, had a 20-yard reception. We'll forget about the negative 5-yard reception later. But yeah, it was an overall solid performance. I would be starting him with confidence the rest of the way. I think early in the year, even a couple weeks ago, you probably were a little hesitant plugging him in as your running back. I don't think you should be anymore.
No, absolutely not. And I am stoked right now because I didn't even realize that we were like live, like on YouTube. We got questions coming in. So yes, do not be afraid to bring in these questions, guys. I want to see comments. I want to see them off the chain. I'm getting a little bit amped right now because I'm stoked to see these. And I love this question. This question came in from Russell Mavis. Anyways, come this offseason, do the Packers move on from Aaron Jones, then AJ Dillon plays? What are our thoughts towards that? I know mine, but I want to hear yours first because I'm going to go Spitfire status on this.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know me, not a Spitfire guy. I do think the Packers will move on from Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon will be playing. Can you remind me, because I'm sure you have this off the top of your head, Jamal Williams, free agent next year as well?
Yes.
Okay. Thought so. Williams and let Dillon and Williams run a 1-2 punch type of thing. Their usage with Aaron Jones is super bizarre. Again, like he had like 3 catches for or 3 carries for 9 yards for the longest time. Eventually finishes the game with what like 15 60. For 69. Yeah. So, you know, at the end of the day, you're like, oh, not too bad. But
not if you play DFS, damn it.
But yeah, I think they'll probably look to move to Dylan and not pay the running back. He's Aaron Jones. If you look at the free agent class, he's going to be the top running back for free agents this offseason. So I think he's going to be looking for a bigger deal. And I don't think the Packers are going to do that.
He is going to be one of the top guys. He's definitely tier one, no matter who else is in there. Like, he's tier one. And I have him actually going to the Arizona Cardinals. And this is something I've been on since back this time last year, actually in October last year. I predicted that he was going to go to the Arizona Cardinals to help out Kyler Murray. I don't foresee Kenyon Drake moving in there. We have already seen Chase Edmonds just, you know, he's not a bell cow back. He's not the main guy. But Aaron Jones can be. And with that system, you don't need guys that are straight line speed. You need guys that are quick, efficient in the pocket, have great, you know, great feet. This is something where Aaron Jones could succeed tremendously. Last year, we saw almost the majority of games where Aaron Jones was not actually seeing a high level or high amount of touches. When you go back and you look at the next gen stats, we saw his running tree and saw the ways that he was running, and he was going behind the offensive line and zigging back and forth before trying to make a cut. What they want is a wide zone run scheme, very similar to what they ran with the Tennessee Titans, where he gets diagonal, he runs up the field, finds that hole, cuts up the field, and gets downfield as quickly as possible. That's not what's happening right now. Listen, Dylan's been a huge disappointment for me. I have not been more disappointed in a rookie running back in a long time than I have of A.J. Dylan. I was big on A.J. Dylan. However, he needs to develop. He needs to become a more intelligent type runner and learn how to find these holes. Now, Jonathan Taylor was the same sort of way, but Jonathan Taylor has been actually learning firsthand. Meanwhile, A.J. Dylan has had the luxury to sit back. So A.J. Dylan for me is actually a huge buy and should be the starting running back for the Green Bay Packers moving forward. Now, if they resign Jamal Williams or not, it's kind of a dart throw at this point. There's a lot of running backs in this free agent class, so I don't think that Jamal Williams will command a tremendous amount of money. If they sit there and they bring him back on a 1 or 2 year deal, that's very possible. That's not going to affect A.J. Dillon or my love for A.J. Dillon. But I'm going to go out there and I'm going to buy A.J. Dillon for a third round pick, because I've already done it in three different leagues where I have an early third round draft pick and I've literally sent it out as a dart throw. And people have taken it because there have been so many injuries this year that people need to free up roster space. And then the winning teams that took him in the late second round, you know, some even took him in the late first round, they are sitting there like championship contenders and they don't have space to keep on these projects. So you can go get them for a third round pick. And although that has nothing to do with week 14, outside of Aaron Jones completely failing epically just going up in flames in a fashion where he should have destroyed Detroit, this is indicative of what's to come for 2021.
Yep. Concur.
Cool. All right. Let's go ahead and cover a guy that I have not been high on. Let's go ahead and cover David Montgomery. You can just take the floor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't been high on David Montgomery either. And interestingly enough, as you know from the Fantasy Intervention group chat, I was potentially going to be buying a David Montgomery share about 2 weeks ago, trying to shore up my running back position for a championship run. Shore it up, not, you know. But I wasn't convinced that David Montgomery is a guy that's going to carry a team to a championship. Doesn't strike me as that type of player for your fantasy rosters. Of course, he had a good game last week, and then this week, the final stat line, hey, 11, 113 and a touchdown. You can't beat it. 3 for 42 through the air. Of course, you know, he had the 80-yard touchdown. When I checked a little bit later, he was at like 3 carries for 76 yards or something, which I was like, of course, David Montgomery ends up with, you know, less yardage than he had on his big run. I can't buy into David Montgomery. When I was trying to trade for him, that guy still wanted a first round pick for him, it's going to be a late first. And I'm like, I just can't do it. I'm sure he'll still be there next year and I'm sure he'll still be the starter. So that'll be helpful if you want him as your RB2 flex type of guy, but I'm just not impressed with him. I mean, it was terrible tackling and a gaping hole on his 80-yard run, which can't take away the 80-yard run. That's great. But I didn't see something that shows me that he's got the, vision of Emmett Smith, the agility of Saquon Barkley, you know, whatever that graphic was back in college.
So with me, like, this is where I messed up with Todd Gurley, right? Todd Gurley, I was the owner of Todd Gurley in multiple different leagues. I traded whatever it took to get the first pick. I love Todd Gurley. And he rewarded me for like one season or two seasons total. But I still held on to him. And the thing was I was always demanding too much. Like, I wanted too much for him. So if I was a team that might have not made the playoffs, Taylor, and I wanted to sit there and sell David Montgomery, where would you be willing to sell him to where you don't lose potential capital moving forward? Because he's high. We'll just say a contender wanted to offer, and they did offer you a late first-round pick or an early second in your rebuilding. Would you take that?
I think if I'm rebuilding, I don't know that I want to move him for less than a first, even though like I think that's a tough pill to swallow to actually put that offer out there if I'm trying to acquire him. But I don't know that I would take less than that just because we have no reason to believe that he's not going to be the starter again next year. He's obviously finished the year strong, which for those dynasty owners that just look at the stats, you know, they'll look at the box scores from the last four or five games of the season, see that he's got a high snap share, lots of fantasy points, probably will finish as a, I think he was like an RB9 in one of my PPR leagues coming into this week, something like that. So he's going to have a strong, he's going to have a strong fantasy finish. And so I don't think his value is going down this offseason. So if I can only get a second, I don't think I'm moving him for that. I think I'm holding out for the first, or else I'll just wait and try to move him in the offseason or closer to the rookie draft. Who knows?
I feel like his value is never going to be higher than it is right now. Like I just feel like it's there.
It's possible.
I'd sell him for an early second, late first in a heartbeat. I don't know if I'd go any lower than that though. All right, let's talk about you know, a guy that's impressed, and then we're going to move on to the tight end position. Cam Akers, man, had a phenomenal week on Thursday night, right? Like, just completely destroyed New England's rush defense. Is this indicative of what's come for Cam Akers?
I'd say more so than what we've seen up to this point this season where he was struggling to get on the field. I know he had the injury early on. What was it that he had? Ribs? I think it was a rib injury. Which those have known to linger and be painful and things like that. And there's, you know, some speculation that now he's healthy and that's why he's getting the touches. I think it's hard to get inside the mind of some of these coaches, especially a offensive guru like Sean McVay. We just can't even be on his level of thinking. But yeah, so I think what we saw on Thursday, you'll see more of him being the lead back in that offense. I know some of that was aided by the fact that Henderson left at least briefly with an injury. I think he ended up returning, but by that point, Akers was cooking. So I'm not a long-term believer in him necessarily as a top dynasty running back. Are you? Would you have him in your top 12, top 15? Because I have him outside my top 15, I think.
So I had Cam Akers as my number four overall running back going into the draft. Once he ended up with the Rams, it was like, ooh, I don't like the offensive line. He's got competition. Very similar to David Montgomery. I might have to eat my words on Cam Akers. It's not that I didn't like Cam Akers. I always did like him. I just didn't love him. So I dropped him all the way down to like the seventh spot, and he was still ahead of Keyshawn Vaughn. He was ahead of Zach Moss. He was ahead of all those guys. But he fell behind Jerry Jeudy. He fell behind Justin Jefferson. Mm-hmm. He fell behind Henry Ruggs, I believe, and, of course, CeeDee Lamb. So would I move him above any of those guys and eat the words at that point? Maybe Henry Ruggs, maybe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But honestly, like, he hasn't moved the needle too much for me up until I see more production. Now, if you want to try and get ahead of the curve, great, but, dude, you're going to have to pay a whole ton, like early first-round pick for Cam Akers, because these people that like Cam Akers, draft him for a reason. They love this dude. They love him.
Yeah.
I saw people ranking Cam Akers ahead of DeAndre Swift. What the hell is up with that?
It's so bizarre, the players in fantasy football that have, or the players in football that have fantasy football, like, I don't even want to say fans, because fans is an understatement. Like, obsessors, admirers, secret lovers, whatever they are. And Akers is one of the guys that, you know, all it took was a long run and a couple chunk plays, and the timeline was blowing up on Thursday with the Akers love. So good for them. I'm happy for them. I will not be one acquiring Cam Akers. I would absolutely sell for any late first if I could.
Oh, man. I still like Cam Akers. I can't fade him too hard, but he is somebody that if the right price is there, if somebody offers me a top end pick or one of the wide receivers that we brought up, You know, hell, DeAndre Swift. I'll take, dude, I'll even take him over CEH. I really would. And I don't even like, I hate CEH. Like, I just don't think he has the upside. He has a great floor. He has a phenomenal floor, but his upside is very capped in this offense. I still would rather have the floor of Akers every single week. I'm sorry, the floor of CEH every week than having to play this game with Sean McVay of guessing which running back he's going to
utilize. Would you take Higgins or Akers straight up in a trade?
I'd take Akers, but slightly. I'm talking about by a hair. I would have taken Higgins prior to the Joe Burrow injury. But the Joe Burrow injury, I know that it's just an ACL and he'll probably be fine. It still gets in my head because I guess because of RG3 and me being a Washington football team fan for as many years as I was prior to renouncing them.
Stop.
It makes me nervous. I know you hate that. I know you hate that. And I bring it up all the time and I loved it. All right. So let's go ahead and let's bring up the tight end position with my favorite dynasty tight end. And I know you think it's going to be Hockenson, but it's not. Foster Moreau, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Foster Moreau coming out of LSU was an absolute monster. I had him in so many leagues. I dropped him in one, and it was my favorite league. And then, yeah, somebody claimed him off waivers, and I was so mad at myself. But Foster Moreau is somebody that I feel like is a must-own moving forward. I know that Darren Waller is great, but Foster Moreau is such a talented specimen. And if he ends up sticking with the Raiders, they're either going to have to go to two tight end sets, or they're going to have to move on from him. Like, he's going to end up playing somewhere and being a starting tight end. I'd rather have him early and keep him, you know, on the back of my roster in dynasty leagues for as long as I possibly can, rather than just pass on him and have to pay for him later. Foster Moreau is going to be a stud in this league.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is with dynasty rosters, at least in all the most of the leagues I'm in, them being so deep, having taxi squads, you got your IR slots, like most leagues are deep enough that you can take flyers on guys. And in almost all of my tight end premium leagues, I've got probably 6 to 7 tight ends, and Foster Moreau is usually one of them. Dawson Knox is one that I have stashed in places because starting any of these guys, but who knows? They pop and, you know, you've got them before they turn into the Darren Wallers of the world. I'd stash them, but like you said, unless he gets out of where he is now or the situation somehow changes drastically, 2 targets today, one of them being the 47-yard touchdown. It was a nice catch and run, so he showed his athleticism. But, yeah, go get him. 4th-round pick, 5th-round pick. You can get him.
Is there anybody else that impressed you in this tight end realm? Because this, I mean, outside of Gesicki figuring out that he was a real boy, mm-hmm. you know, it was like, or he was a real tight end, excuse me. Sorry, I'm stuck on Pinocchio. And then he ended up breaking right after that. We don't even know what the issue is going to be. But did they ever come out and say if it was a stinger?
I haven't seen an update on him, no. We need the real Adam
underscore H to come on here and let us know.
Adam Huh. So I would say if you want to classify him as a tight end, I think he's the tight end wide receiver on Sleeper. But Robert Tanyan. I mean, he's interesting because he's had the couple blowout games, which tight end season has put him as like a top 6 tight end or something crazy like that. But he's been pretty consistent, you know, give or take every few weeks where he lays an egg. But I think he might be a free agent, maybe. But he's interesting if he stays in Green Bay, I think. I know a portion of his probably target share, a portion of that is due to the fact that outside of Adams, there's unreliable options. But he's interesting to me. I mean, when you get to the tight end 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 range, it's really a crapshoot. Would you rather have, well, do you like Bob before I ask the next question?
Yeah, I like Bob. Bob's a nice guy.
What about like Bob or Jonu? Like, where would you have those two guys?
Oh, Jonu's everyone... close, way okay, ahead.
That's
Jonu.
What I assumed so, but had to ask.
Yeah, and I like Bob, but I don't know that they re-sign him. If they do, it's going to be a very minimal contract, maybe a 1-year mm-hmm. deal. So he can mm-hmm. go prove it that he's overall good tight end. But dude, it's tough to sit there and navigate through this. I do want to bring up one guy who was overly disappointed with because this team did go off and one of their tight ends got a touchdown. And I was hoping that it was going to be Cole Kmet, but it was not. Cole Kmet, 4 for 41, no touchdown. He still had 10 yards per reception. He saw 7 targets. Played his highest snap percentage on the year so far with 86%. He's got Minnesota. He's got Jacksonville left for this fantasy run. So he could actually be valuable to a team that's competing. But do you trust him? Like, are you stepping on that magic carpet for rest of season and for Dynasty moving forward? Like, are you stepping on that magic carpet with Aladdin and taking the ride? Because he can show you, you know, world. That's great analysis right there. Great radio, great analysis.
That's kind of how I feel. That's how I feel. Dynasty for sure. I mean, 21-year-old, and he's the only rookie tight end that's actually done anything. So
Adam Trautman's done something.
I'm so sorry. But to have a 21-year-old tight end come in, produce somewhat. You've seen the snap share rising now the last few weeks. Jimmy Graham, I guess, will eventually retire someday. I don't know. But until he does, he'll continue catching touchdowns. Dynasty, I'm all in for him. For rest of the season, I will not be plugging him into any lineups. I will stand on that one.
All right. So let's go ahead and close this episode out, right? Bunch of good information here for these Dynasty teams. Hopefully Dynasty Happy Hour was happy with what we put out. And we appreciate you guys for tuning in. Before we cover the last little bit of information, go ahead and let everybody know where to find you, Taylor.
Twitter @_TaylorCornell.
Good job. You guys can check me out at @FF_intervention, fantasyintervention.com, youtube.com/fantasyintervention. We've got all sorts of fun stuff. And of course, every other Sunday night, we're just pounding the table for this good content, if you know what I'm saying. That good. let's talk about your number one defense moving forward, or defensive player if you want to, but let's talk about the number one defense moving forward for Dynasty Leagues if you still play with that.
Haven't played with a team defense in a few years. So I will say you do not want to ask me defense questions.
Great job. I'm going
to
go.
I want to be honest with my listeners to say, don't listen to anything I say about defenses because I have no idea. I only follow the offense. So perfect. Chase, show us why you're the expert in this area.
Well, we have different areas that we're always looking at when it comes to expertise, and defenses is something that I like to check out, but actually on the opposite end of the spectrum. I like to see, you know, where teams could actually fail on offense up against certain defenses. And man, I do not want to play any offensive player up against this Washington football team. You know, we saw the Steelers.
Homer. Just kidding.
I was about to bring up the Colts too. And then the Bengals. No, I would never bring up the Bengals on defense. That was just a terrible take. Yeah. No, but the Indianapolis Colts and the Washington football team are two teams that I don't really want to play my opposing players. However, Washington's on fire. And they've got 7 first round picks on that offensive line, I believe. It's just absolutely insane. Or seven solid picks on the defensive line that are just absolutely insane. Moving forward, Chase Young today looked like an absolute monster, I watched the game today with my mom. Not even kidding you. We sat in my house. We cleaned my fridge out. We cleaned my kitchen. We cleaned everything. And then I watched football, and Chase Young looks like an absolute monster back there. Insane. Like, just wrecking teams. So if you guys have running backs, if you guys have quarterbacks that are scheduled up against Washington in the near future, do not play them because Chase Young will wreck their world, along with Jonathan Allen, Jerome Payne, all these guys. Anyways, if y'all also want to get in on some of the cool things that we do behind the scenes, you guys should check out Top Loaders. Like, Top Loaders is awesome. I don't know if you guys know what breaks are or whatnot, but if you are into trading cards like I am, you know, you guys can actually see this right here. If you guys are watching on screen, we've got Joe Burrow and Tua, right? This is autographed. This has a piece of their jersey, right? It's
can
out of
cut.
It's,
can you cut the Burrow part and just send it to me?
Yeah, actually, I can do that for you. Dude, I wonder why Tyler never asked me to do that. Yeah, I'll do that. No problem. I'll just cut it right across with a knife and we'll be good to go.
Perfect. Yep.
Anyways, that's out of 15, guys. It's my prized possession, of course. Top Loaders. I got this from Top Loaders. And Top Loaders is a phenomenal, phenomenal place to actually do breaks. If you guys go to thetoploaders.com, you can actually sign up for some of their breaks. They do one on Friday, and I believe, one on Monday night. You guys can hop into these breaks, and what the breaks are is they actually will give you an opportunity to buy a team in these massive packs. And for example, like, if I was going to go out and I was going to buy a giant box of this, it would actually cost me like $800, $900, maybe even $1,000. There's a Spectra break. These range anywhere from, like I said, $800 to $1,000. Instead, I ended up going on there, and I think I paid like something along the lines of, I don't know, $45 or something like that. I ended up getting entered in for the Miami Dolphins. I ended up winning a card that's worth $1,500. So if you're somebody that's into trading cards, if you're somebody that's into the same sort of stuff that we're in over there at Dynasty Happy Hour, you guys need to check out thetoploaders.com. Go over there and sign up. Let them know that Dynasty Happy Hour sent you. You'll get a discount. It's been fun messing around with those guys. And honestly, it's something as to where I cannot miss a single break. Absolutely love it.
I'm getting ready to potentially enter into this world, so I will be personally checking out Top Loaders very shortly, probably over the next few weeks when I'm not working.
I've got cards on cards on cards. I can't. Hey. I can't even talk. We got a Michael Pittman here. We've got a David Montgomery here.
Oh, wow. Its value will never be higher, Chase.
I'm going to burn it. I swear I'm going to burn it. I mean, Joe Mixon, Barry Sanders. I've got DeAndre Swift with patches autographed. It's crazy. Go check out thetoploaders.com and go sign up for a break today or tonight. For real. It's worth it, guys. It's a lot of fun. I have a blast with it, obviously. I'm not lying. Thank you guys for tuning in to Dynasty Happy Hour. Hope we satisfied your needs. Have a good night.
Cheers.